Hi, this is Pastor Greg, and you're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at ChosenGenerationRadio.com. That's Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glass.
My passion is the fight for freedom.
Good morning.
My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Sexual predators and comprehensive sex education both break down inhibitions. That's what they start with. They also gain trust with the child and then slowly start to get them towards sexual activity.
Anything goes. You are teaching children adult child sex. You're teaching transgender issues. Children are moldable and influenced by that.
They said, okay, now we need you and your team to be able to explain what homosexuality is to a four-year-old student.
To introduce this kind of material at that age, frankly, it's child abuse.
You're going to teach our children that it's okay for any two children of any age, of any sex, to have sexual intercourse with each other as long as two components are present, one's using a condom and they both give consent. Did I hear that correctly?
It's not a neutral venue. There's no such thing. Okay, the schools are doing your job. They are discipling your children, but they're not discipling them in the faith of Jesus Christ.
It's only the exceptional child that even survives that system. Most do not survive. Most have not survived.
They believe that children are sexual from birth and that they deserve and have the right to be sexually active and to seek sexual pleasure. And if anyone is stopping them from that, then you are judging and oppressing them.
Even kindergarten now, they're wanting to teach them more and more perverse information and acts and put that into the children's minds. And once that poison is in a child's mind, it doesn't leave. They'll always remember what they learned. And it's by design, it's orchestrated.
In my humble opinion, it will be worse before it gets better.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. Thanks so much for being with me. I do know you have a choice in where you can listen each and every day, and I thank you for keeping it tuned here to Chosen Generation Radio. Hour number three And if you missed, let me see, did I hit? I'm going to undo that and start over. I don't know if I cut off the last recording yet or not. I thought I did, but now I'm thinking maybe I didn't. Anyway, I did now. So first hour, David Shostokas, our constitutional attorney, and a lot of interesting conversation there about the speakership situation and the Chevron doctrine thing that's coming up, and the four branches of government, and just a in-depth conversation about the constitutional originalist perspective of the things that we're dealing with. Then Melanie Collette and I got into a good conversation in hour number two, having to do with the GOP and do we compromise and what does that look like? She's running for office in New Jersey. And then had a good conversation with Rick Manning just now about the whole issue and the fight. What do we really want to see happen, and how, what does that look like? Relative to the changes that really truly need to be made, and it's in how business is being done there in Washington D.C. and that's the critical component. Are we the people being represented? And then we got into, you know, the root conclusions, which really ties well in, I think, with this weekly program part that we do, where I talk to members, and we, for years I talked with Dan Gaynor before he retired, but I've been speaking with Michael Morris and Tiaran Rose Mandelberg with Newsbusters and MRC, holding that what David Shostokas referred to as the what's kind of like the fourth branch, and I'm not talking about the administrative state, which has become the fourth branch, but the press, who is supposed to keep the representation of the people and each of those branches honest. But because of their biases, they fail. And I'm grateful for Newsbusters and MRC, Media Research Center, for how they call them to account for said failures. Michael, welcome. Good to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me on. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I think David Shostokas is hitting it on the head too. It really is the fourth branch, right? I mean, because a lot of times you see what the legacy media and the big three networks, ABC, NBC, and CBS, are doing is they're just regurgitating deep state and Democratic Party federal government talking points. So, yeah, nailed it.
Well, and it's why we continue to do this segment to bring this to your attention, but it's why you guys at Newsbusters continue to analyze these things and try to help people understand. And, you know, one of the deepest problems, Michael, that we talked about is just the general indoctrination and the bombardment of busyness. The average American is working now. They've forced everyone, or the majority. Well, number one, we have a lot of single-parent homes now. For the first time in our country's history, we have more single-parent homes than we have two-parent homes. Number two, even in two-parent homes, the majority of those, both mom and dad, are out in the workforce having to work in order to try to keep up. The kids are gone all day then in basically what we've come to truly understand are indoctrination centers, and this speaks to the censorship issues. Not taking a side on whether they are indoctrinating or aren't indoctrinating, but simply saying, hey, parents have a right to be able to have their voices heard. And the news, the journalists should be covering these stories without bias.
Yeah, again, absolutely right. And look, it is incredible, isn't it? You've got the governmental system in the United States that's created a situation where you mentioned we've got a lot of single parent homes already. But even when there aren't, there's moms and dads both having to go to work so that they can maintain the style of life that we've had here in the U.S. and still pay their taxes, still buy gas, still buy the incredibly expensive groceries now, along with energy prices at the home and other things. Costs are going up across the board. And so both parents are at work trying to meet ends meet. And so they're relying a lot of times on network television and, again, legacy outlets to do their job. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is for years, for decades, since the MRC has been covering this sort of thing, the media has not been doing that.
Right.
There's an obvious leftist slant. And you mentioned earlier before the break that you talked with David Shostokas a little bit about the McCarthy situation and the House Speaker situation. And how did the media handle that? Well, it wasn't without bias, that's for sure. You know, you got ABC's World News Tonight, David Muir. He was covering it, and he, of course, said that it was the hard right GOP that ousted Kevin McCarthy. Here's a quote from him. Tonight, for the first time in U.S. history, the House has voted to oust the Speaker. Kevin McCarthy brought down by a handful of hard right members of his own party who are furious with McCarthy for working with moderate Republicans and the Democrats to keep the government open. Well, interestingly, those quote-unquote hard-right Republicans worked hand-in-hand with Democrats to oust McCarthy. In fact, it was an overwhelming majority of Republicans that voted to keep him in. So, you know, which is it? It can't be both. And I really doubt David Muir would say the same thing with quote-unquote hard-left Democrats in the House or in the Senate if they were doing something that was unusual or strange. But it wasn't just him. Norah O'Donnell, CBS Evening News, went on a similar rant. For the first time in U.S. history, the American democracy in the first Congress of 1789, the Speaker of the House has been removed from his position as the leader of the chamber by a vote of 216 to 210. Lawmakers booted Speaker Kevin McCarthy, throwing the House into chaos and into unprecedented territory. You can hear the hyperbolic language there, chaos, you know, trying to make it sound like this is just, oh, it's just wild what's going on. NBC Nightly News' Lester Holt wasn't too far behind either, breaking tonight Kevin McCarthy's short and rocky run as Speaker of the House of Representatives has come to an end. Short and rocky, really? Okay. You know, if this had happened to a Democrat, this is not the sort of language that would be used. They would be making all sorts of excuses and trying to cover up for the Democratic Party.
Well, and to your point, HuffPost, this is another story that's out there. This has to do with John Eastman. And this is the Huff Post, and I read this with David, and so and he commented, you know, on it from his legal perspective and what he is aware of. But so here's what they write: the Supreme Court rejected a request by indicted right wing attorney. Now, first of all, understand, indicted doesn't mean convicted. Indicted just simply means you're accused of a crime. You can be innocent as the day is long, but they use that as a loaded word. So the Supreme Court rejected a request by indicted right-wing attorney John Eastman to throw out court rulings that identified him as a key figure in former President Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election. He wasn't trying to overturn. He was saying we need to investigate whether or not there was problems with the election, and we've come to find out, Georgia has said, parts of Georgia have said, yes, there's trouble. Arizona, a same issue. Pennsylvania, same issue. So Michigan, same issue. Anyway, so the court's ruling on Monday affirms lower court decisions that resulted in Capitol riot investigators. Again, they use the word riot, Michael, but they don't use that word when they talk about Ray Epps. Ray Epps was just a protester, but everybody else is a rioter. And then there's this part. Let's see. Eastman is considered the legal architect of the plan to have Vice President Mike Pence use his ceremonial role to prevent Congress from certifying Joe Biden's victory And then he goes on to say, most notably, the Supreme Court ruling says that Justice Clarence Thomas had recused himself. Thomas has recently come under fire for not recusing himself in cases where he may have a conflict of interest, specifically after a ProPublica report earlier this year revealed the conservative justice failed to disclose lavish gifts he received from a GOP mega donor for years. Like, you know, going out for dinner.
Well, look, the loaded language is so clear, and they, man, do they really hate Justice Clarence Thomas because he's an African-American man, right? And he's on the wrong side. Notice they didn't use the same rhetoric with Representative Jamal Bowman. They didn't attack Jamal Bowman in this sort of light, did they? No, CNN and MSNBC actually did their best to try to pull things away, try to simmer things down and cover for Jamal Bowman. For those in your audience that aren't aware, what did Jamal Bowman do? While there was a vote for the government shutdown, right, to fund government, Jamal Bowman actually pulled a fire alarm, okay? He said, I'm embarrassed to admit that I activated the fire alarm.
Because he thought it was going to open the door. I mean, this guy was the principal of a school, okay? I mean, this is a very highly educated guy, and he thought that the fire pole was going to open up the door for him. Yeah, sure you did.
Yeah, sure, right. You did. Does anyone really believe that? I mean, come on. CNN and MSNBC, talking heads on both sides of these liberal cable networks, they actually uncritically read Bowman's official statement aloud. MSNBC host Yasmin, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce her last name, just Yasmin. she was the first to do it on Saturday. And then, you know, it just reeked of damage control. Her colleague Alex Witt followed suit, more of the same. Quote, what do you say to Republicans as you just jumped on this, saying, oh, he should face an ethics investigation for creating a delay in voting and be expelled? Well, I would say maybe they were right. I mean, my goodness, you said it yourself. He was a principal. This guy is an educated man. He is a member of Congress. Can he not read? You know, there were photos of him holding the sign about that being an emergency door and then of him pulling the fire alarm. My goodness. The media clearly does not have the same standard for Republicans as it does Democrats. It's outrageous.
Well, and let's be clear that it was interrupting a public meeting, you know, an official government gathering. That's what they've charged the majority of the January 6th protesters, individuals that showed up, even individuals that were just standing on the steps. But that's what they've charged them with, Michael. They've charged them with interrupting a government proceeding. Well, I don't know. I think that pulling that fire alarm certainly interrupted because it caused them to have to shut down the vote. It caused them to have to evacuate the building. And that's interfering. That's the same exact thing. And that's what he did. So should we label him as an insurrectionist? Shouldn't he face the same level of legal scrutiny as the January 6th defendants? Sounds like it to me.
Well, you know, fair questions. And, of course, the media jumping all over Republicans, all over conservatives for even asking such questions or even saying that, hey, maybe there should be some sort of investigation of this guy for what he did. What could have amounted to be a stall tactic of sorts to paint the GOP in a bad light. But, look, you're not going to see that from the legacy media. You're not going to see that from the Big Three. Why? Because they're in the pocket of the left. They're in the pocket of the deep state and the federal government. It's so clear. It's so obvious. And that's why the Media Research Center, Newsbusters, Free Speech America, that's what we do here. We expose this sort of nonsense so that you all know what's going on.
So a couple of those stories, more election interference. Google search buries Biden opponents. Talk to me about that story.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, this is the second time we've done this sort of study here in the primary season for the GOP and the Democratic Party leading up to the 2024 election. The first time we did it, of course, it buried all the Republicans. There was not a single Republican on the first page of search results. What did we ask? We searched Google presidential campaign websites. So just, you know, an innocuous phrase that's not right-leaning, it's not left-leaning. There's no bias here. We don't mention GOP. We don't mention Democratic Party. Just presidential campaign websites. What would you expect to come up when you search that? You would expect, well, I don't know, maybe
Michael maybe Dukakis. Michael Dukakis.
No, I mean, honestly, you would expect Joe Biden. You would expect Donald Trump, probably the leading two candidates at least, right?
Sure.
To come up in the search results. Maybe you would see second and third. You might see
RFK Jr.
or Haley. You might see RFK Jr. You might see Marianne Williamson. Well, you would think that's what you would see, but instead, no, you don't get any Republicans. And in fact, it's worse than that. It buries RFK Jr. It's incredible. Wow. And so we changed our search just a little bit this time just to see. So we're like, okay, well, what if we actually search for Republican presidential campaign websites? So now we're intentionally trying to get Google to show Republicans, right?
Yep.
Well, only two candidates showed up. And guess what? None of them were Donald Trump. Marianne Williamson, her website actually shows up on the front page, and so did Will Hurd. Will Hurd's running for president, folks. I'm not sure if you knew that or not. I actually did not know that until we ran this search. But Will Hurd is the only Republican that showed up on the front page of search results for Google. No Trump, no DeSantis, no Ramaswamy, no Pence, no Haley, no Scott, no Christie. And this is just the day before the second presidential primary debate for the GOP.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Wow. So we did the same thing for the Democratic side. We looked Democratic presidential campaign websites. And wouldn't you know, Joe Biden, of course, shows up. But Robert F. Kennedy Jr.? Nope. Did not appear when we did the search a week prior. Did not appear at all. Marianne Williamson showed up, and Elizabeth Warren showed up. No Hillary Clinton this time. She showed up in the first time we did this sort of study, but she did not appear this time. Much to many people's chagrin, I'm sure. So we also ran a study, kind of going after Google a little bit again. We searched its Bard program. Bard is Google's AI, and we actually were going to kind of test it out and see what sort of information showed up. Because again, what these big tech giants are doing is they're integrating artificial intelligence in their search, and they're using these ranking systems and these algorithms with AI to actually filter results. So we wanted to search Bard and see what it was doing, what comes up. We asked it to rank the 2024 presidential candidates a week before the GOP presidential primary debate. The chat bar answered by completely ignoring Democrat Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Republican Vivek Ramaswamy and also Chris Christie. So very similar results. Some of Biden's biggest challengers completely omitted in the results. It's not surprising that the AI for Google would be following a similar track as what its Google search does on the internet.
Wow. You know, I was just noticing you've got anti-religious bigots, NBC panics over religion in public schools. There is one statement in here that I would mention to Kevin that I would ask him to double check, because he writes, despite the fact that separation of church and state was written into the Constitution, which it isn't. The separation of church and state is not in the United States Constitution. There's an interpretation which has always been accepted based on the Danbury Baptist letter of Thomas Jefferson, but that's not actually codified in the Constitution of the United States, and it's not a separation of church and state in the sense of the church cannot have an influence over state issues. It's that the state cannot adopt a particular church or denomination and create a national church. But the point of it is that, again, you have a very anti-religious push, and it doesn't surprise me that they're pushing back on something that's being done, fortunately for us, right here in North Texas, where we still believe in God, family, and country.
Right. Well, and look, you're hitting on something interesting. This is something I studied in college, actually. And, you know, at the founding of the nation, actually, and after the Constitution was incorporated here in the United States, individual states actually could have established state religions at that time. And so what the Constitution actually did was, and you said this, actually prevents the federal government from creating an established religion over the whole of the country. So, but states were allowed to be incubators for, you know, their own sort of religious practices if they so chose. Now, most states obviously did not go this route, and that's not the way that the Constitution is interpreted today. But initially, that was allowed. There could be individual state churches. What they were trying to prevent is things like what was happening over in England.
Well, that was the whole thing, right? They didn't want a Church of England. They clearly did not want the Church of the United States of America. The irony, I didn't mean to cut you off, I'm sorry, but the irony is that you had, if I'm not mistaken, at the time that the Danbury Baptist letter was written, I think there were as many as 15 congregations that were meeting in Capitol buildings over the course of their weekly church gatherings, including one that Thomas Jefferson personally attended that was held in the Rotunda.
Well, and look, you know, absolutely right. And you know, church, Christianity, the Judeo-Christian heritage was a major part of the founding of the United States government. Yeah. In fact, that's why they prayed before the sessions. That's why you see replete mentions throughout speeches of the founding fathers and presidents from the beginning and on. That's why there's a National Day of Prayer. You know, these things are not an accident. That's what the American system was built on, was an understanding that God is head and that he's over government.
Well,
it's necessary for the sort of constitutional government that we have here in the United States. But the media doesn't want you to know that.
Yeah. And just to close things out, because we're out of time, but yesterday one of my guests raised up a bill. And on the bill, a United States bill, it says one nation under God is written in the money that we exchange each and every day. And the Pledge of Allegiance, which of course now you're not allowed to say in school, I guess, anymore. But it also says one nation under God. Michael, God bless you. Thank you for being here with me today. I appreciate you.
Yeah, God bless you too. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. You have a great week.
All right. Sounds great. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Vivian Cottingham will be with us. There's a new revelation on the JFK matter. Gentleman, Paul Landis, 88 years old, former Secret Service agent, was there on that day, and he said that he's the one who put the bullet on he put the bullet on the what they carried the president to the ambulance with. Anyway, so we'll talk about that coming up. And then the impact of the whole JFK thing and what it's done to undermine our trust in government. Did it start there? We'll talk about that too. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. You're listening to Chosen Generation Radio.
So up next, we have Clanslight. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. And Clanslight is a formula that's made from a natural orthosilic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts, which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your clean slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your clean slate today.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king size regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen, or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Did you know you can do your tithing and love offering right from your computer? Visit www.chosengenerationradio.com to support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation. Now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topics off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. Thanks so much for being here. I know you have a choice of where you can listen each and every day, and I thank you for keeping it tuned here to Chosen Generation Radio. JFK, this is probably one of the most talked about and discussed and fascinating topics in American history, really, in on so many levels, especially now, because most people don't think about Lincoln's assassination per se. Watergate has some relevance in some people's minds, but in modern American history, well, and of course now they've, you know, decided that we're this terrible racist country and we take advantage of every minority and we're just, you know, a bad group of people. But the JFK assassination is the one that I think fascinates people. And my next guest has done a lot of deep research into this. And there's a brand new book that is getting ready to come out, written by a gentleman who is a former Secret Service agent, 88-year-old Paul Landis, who witnessed the president's death at very close range. And by the way, the word I was looking for a few minutes ago is gurney. Placed the bullets on the gurney. Anyway, I want to welcome Vivian Cunningham to the program. Vivian, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you. You know, you mentioned Abraham Lincoln's death, or assassination, murder.
Yes.
Assassination is a nice way of saying murder. I don't know why they substitute the word, but I've gotten to the point where I like to call it like it is. He was murdered. But, I mean, if memory serves me correct, I wasn't there at the time, but they said that Booth jumped up on the stage and shot Lincoln in the head.
No, he was behind him.
Was he behind him?
He was up. He snuck in behind him in the booth that he was sitting in. He jumped from there to the stage,
okay,
which is how he injured his leg, as the report goes, and that, you know, that limp and injury and what have you was part of the reason probably.
That he was caught so easily
because he messed his leg up pretty bad making that jump.
Right. So Lincoln's murder, though tragic, was an easy solve. I mean, the guy shot him in the back of the head, jumped on the stage, so everybody saw him. He hurt his leg, and they were able to track him.
Right.
So, though Lincoln's murder was tragic, it was an easy solve, and it was cut and dry.
And even the co-conspirators that were a part of it, I mean, it was really, I mean, they had, you know, I think the first woman that was ever tried was a part of that. I don't remember if that was Booth's mom or sister. I don't remember who she was, but there was a woman that was tried as a part of that, as being a part of it and found to be guilty.
Right. So, but with that, they know who did it.
Yes, ma'am.
And they know why he did it, because, you know, he was anti-Lincoln because he was from the South and he wanted, you know, all of the reasons behind the South. We won't go into that. Mm-hmm. You can call it states' rights, you can call it slavery, whichever way you look at it. He was anti-Lincoln, and yeah, he was mad when the North won the war. So, that being said, with the Kennedy assassination, like we talked about last time, nobody has solved this.
The good time is
to go up to the FBI building in Washington, D.C. It's even more fun if you take young kids who are like anywhere from 8 to 12 years old. And when they get to the Manchester and they say, this is the gun that killed Kennedy, and you have the kids say to them, why haven't you ever solved that murder? And then they start, oh, we solved it. Oswald did it. And then you start pointing out, or have the child, because I've done this with my children, pointing out, you know, all the reasons that Oswald didn't kill Kennedy, and watch them try and backpedal and him and Han spit and sputter, and it's a good time. I highly recommend it for those of you looking for something to do fun.
Just don't wear your MAGA. Just don't wear your MAGA hat. That's the only thing I would suggest. You don't.
Yeah, probably not a good idea because I'd probably get you shot.
Yeah.
And that could happen right there in the FBI building, and they'd never solve it.
There's a good chance.
But so what I made 5 pages of notes because I went back through.
I'm very disappointed, Vivian. Only 5 pages of notes. I'm a little.
Well, yeah. You would think there would be more.
Yeah.
But well, I have probably, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I have about somewhere between 50 and 20 books on the assassination.
Yep.
They're not easy to come by and they're expensive. So here we are.
There you go.
But, I only managed to get 5 pages of notes out of 20 books on Landis. And
well, that's the thing that's kind of interesting about him is that it there, you know, he appears to be someone who was very, very private, who has not put himself on the historic stage, so to speak, but it does seem as though he did share this with some colleagues. I mean, this isn't the first time he has said this. He just chose not to put himself at the center of the controversy.
Well, the first 2.5 pages that of notes that I have is just from the New York article.
Okay.
New York Times article. 1, 2, 3. I got 2 pages of notes out of 20 books. So that tells you that as far as the people who have looked into this, he's not been, I don't want to say he wasn't relevant because he was there, but pretty much wasn't very relative to the people writing the books. So the questions I have, because okay, he was on the car behind the Kennedys. Now I think we discussed this last time. Anytime the president, especially with the top down and whatnot, they would have been walking around the car or riding on the running boards of the presidential limo. And for whatever reason, they were told to stand down and they were to ride on the follow-up car.
Right.
The Secret Service people. So he was on the backup car or follow-up car. And when he found out from Secret Serviceman Hill that the president was obviously gone, and they took off for the hospital. When they got to the hospital and he helped to get the president's body out and Mrs. Kennedy out of the car, he said that he found 2 bullets in a puddle of blood. Okay. Then he found what is known as the magic bullet, supposedly laying in the back seat, and he said he thought it had hit the president and bounced out of his back, is what he is saying in this book, apparently. And he said he picked it up because he didn't want souvenir hunters to get a hold of it. He put it in his pocket, went into the hospital, got everybody situated, and supposedly put the magic bullet on the gurney that the president was on, thinking that the doctors would help. or it would help the doctors. None of that makes any sense to me. And I realize that he just watched the president get his head blown off, you know, so maybe he was extremely confused, and that does make a lot of sense. But you've got two bullets in a pile of blood, and you leave them. You've got the magic bullet, so you pick it up and you take it in and you set it on a gurney. You didn't give it to the Secret Service, or, you know, to the police. You didn't give it to the FBI. You didn't give it to anybody. You just stuck it on a gurney. That just doesn't make sense. And then the question remains or comes to mind. So now, supposedly, we have three bullets just in the presidential car. Why wasn't fingerprints done on any of those bullets?
Well, the question I have, so who found the two bullets with, or saw the two bullets with, in blood? Landis?
Supposedly Landis did.
But is that reported anywhere else? Because I thought that there was a single bullet theory regarding Oswald. No?
Exactly.
Okay.
He supposedly is the one that picked up
the bullet, right, that he saw
and put it on the gurney.
Right.
Now, in the movie JFK, you see at the hospital somebody walk by and take a bullet out of their pocket and put it on the gurney.
Really?
And you never see who did it. Now, there was a lot of speculation that Jack Ruby did it because he was supposedly at Parkland Hospital when the president was brought in.
Okay.
There was never any real mention of who put that bullet there.
Well, isn't it interesting? Yeah, but Vivian, isn't it interesting that Oliver Stone, Stone's the one who wrote that, right?
He wrote or directed the screenplay. Robert Groden, who is, as far as I'm concerned, the foremost authority on the assassination.
He's the one that. Does that imply to you then that he may have spoken to Landis, or did he just create that scene on the blind?
Well, nobody knows how the bullet got there on this stretcher.
I understand. Well,
so
they
had to come up with something, so they just had some random person. Now, and excuse me, I have to look at my notes so that I make sure I tell you the correct people giving me this information.
Okay.
But
I guess the question then that I have is, because you're talking about there were two bullets that were seen in blood, but there's no evidence anywhere of those bullets. The only bullet that was ever entered into evidence is the singular bullet that was found on the gurney, and Landis is saying, I'm the one who placed that there. Now, was it in the New York Times article that he says that he saw two bullets in blood, or was it in, because there's two different articles that are connected with the one that I just sent you, by the way, which is found at BBC.
The one I found was the New York Times.
Okay. There's also a Vanity Fair article. I haven't read that, but apparently a James Robinat. Do you know that name? Robenalt.
No, but I will take a note of it. And
so he sat down with Landis and did an in-depth interview. The name of the book, by the way, is called The Final Witness. But he apparently did what looks to be a pretty in-depth interview gathering background on Landis, how Landis ended up in Secret Service, where he came from, graduated from Ohio Wesleyan University, and so on. And then...
what was that gentleman's name?
The guy who wrote this article is James Robenault, R-O-B-E-N-A-L-T, with Vanity Fair.
Okay, I'll look into that.
And he did what appears to be a pretty in-depth article. And you can see, actually, Landis is with Jackie Kennedy in Italy on August 30th, 1962. And again with Jackie Kennedy and her sister Lee Radzwell at a museum in Greece on October 8th, 1963. So what these pictures evidence is that he was a long-term Secret Service agent that was assigned to the Kennedys.
Right. He and Hill, Agent Hill,
yes,
were assigned to protecting Jackie and the kids.
Yeah. And an agent, Roy Kellerman.
Don't recognize that name, but that doesn't.
So it was Hill and Roy Kellerman who lifted Kennedy's body onto the gurney.
Okay. Now, but when you go back and you look at the other books that I've found, okay? When the questions come up, why would you leave the two bloody bullets in the car? And take the pristine bullet. That I'm still trying to figure out where this pristine bullet came from. You know? He says he got it out of the Secret Service car. Or out of, not Secret Service, out of the limo, the presidential limo. If you fire a gun, there are markings that each barrel is different, from what I understand. Okay? So you can trace it back to a specific gun. That's my understanding. Now, my son is the ballistics expert. I'm not. But this pristine bullet just happened to be laying there in the seat. And he picked it up and he left the two bloody ones there. There was no real details done on the car. You know, usually when a car is involved in something, any minor crime, let alone anything major like the murder of a president, that car has gone over with a fine-tooth comb. And they didn't with the presidential limo. I mean, they literally wiped that thing clean as a whistle without getting any evidence off of it. Now, the gentleman that found the, his name was Tomlinson, Daryl Tomlinson, was the orderly that was helping with the president's body and stuff. And he is the one that found the pristine bullet. And when he was interviewed by the Warren Commission, he told them, this is not the same bullet that I found and gave, I'm not even sure if it says who he gave it to. Hold on. Yeah, he gave it to Secret Service. He said, this isn't the bullet I gave them. So
who that said that?
To say there were two different pristine bullets.
The orderly said?
That's, right, and that's according to the killing of a president by Robert Groben.
Okay.
So on page 58, if you want to look it up. But, so the orderly that actually found it on the gurney or next to the gurney or wherever he finally ended up finding it, it seemed to travel all over that hospital, it looks like. But he said, this isn't the same bullet. course, Warren Commission just ignored that like they ignored everything else. I mean, when Jackie Kennedy, when they asked Jackie Kennedy what was she doing trying to escape the back of the car, and she said, no, I was going after the back of Jack's head. And the Warren Commission said, Mrs. Kennedy, you are mistaken. No, I'm pretty sure she knew what she was doing at that point. Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm not a big fan of my ex-husband. But if I saw the back of his head get shot off and I went after it, I'm pretty sure I'd know that's what it was. You know? So the Warren Commission makes things up as they go along, or as they went along. But why were the two bullets left? Why wasn't that limousine scoured from head to foot? Or, you know, to find these two bullets that were supposedly left in the blood. You know? Now, whether they were... This is what...
So now
Landis is holding.
Okay.
Is that he found two bloody bullets in a pile of blood and he left them there. But he took the Prestine bullet into the hospital.
Well, but the Warren Commission says there were three shots, there were three shell casings.
There was the one that hit.
Because I'm reading the article, the Vanity Fair article says three spent shells, in fact, were found under a window on the sixth floor. Nearby, partially hidden by some cartons, a rifle with a scope was discovered. The commission determined that the three shots all came from the sixth floor of the book depository.
Right, but one of them was supposedly the Prestine bullet.
Right.
One of them was hit the sidewalk.
See, this is what it says. It says the commission concluded that two of the three shots that had hit the occupants of the limousine, one bullet had transited Kennedy's neck, then most probably hit Governor Connally, and one had fatally wounded Kennedy, striking his head.
But the one that killed Kennedy came from the front. Came from the front. And shot.
I understand what you're. I completely understand what you're saying. And I'm just, folks, so everybody's clear. I don't necessarily have a completed opinion regarding this. There's also and I don't know if you ever got a chance to listen to what I shared with you last time. The disinformation, the Pacheco, what Pacheco had to say about the Kennedy assassination. And the Russian involvement with regards to that, but I found that to be rather interesting as well, because certainly we know that Oswald did spend time in Moscow.
Right.
Moscow. Actually. And we've reached the end of our time. I got 20 seconds to give a station identification. Yeah. And send the show to your daughter. Texas Fully Loaded is coming up here on TECN TV. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. You've been listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at the website, chosengenerationradio.com, chosengenerationradio.com. And I'm signing off on the TECN network right now. And we're clear on TECN. We can take a couple more minutes if you want to finish a thought, Vivian, by all means.
Okay. Oswald obviously spent a lot of time in Russia.
Yeah.
I mean, he met his wife and married her. But there's so many things in this, and that's why I'm looking forward to reading the book. Why would you leave those bullets there? Why wasn't the crime scene, which is obviously... the presidential limousine. Why wasn't it?
I think it's interesting because
they're more investigating into
Here's what the what this article says. Two large bullet fragments were found in the front seat of the limo. Slivers of lead fragments were recovered from an area below the jump seat where the governor's wife, Nellie Conley, had been sitting. Now, and here's the other piece to this that talks about why this writer believes that Landis's story bears accuracy. He talks about the severe PTSD. In fact, Landis left the service within months of this incident happening and struggled for nearly 50 years with severe PTSD from that experience, which is not, you know, different people are impacted by, I mean, you talk to guys that have been, you know, in war and in battle and seen similar kinds of pictures, only obviously compounded by, you know, many of their friends and you know what I'm saying, and co-patriots. But many of them are never the same. Some of them are able to hold it together and do something else. Others are not.
Obviously.
And so...
I can't think of anything more tragic than watching a beloved president get his head blown off. That, to me, would be pretty damn traumatic.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the implication here is that the PTSD is really what silenced him from what he recounts. He says, look, I never, and he never was brought in for testimony, which is, that's really bizarre to me.
I was just getting ready to bring that up.
When you consider,
he was never interviewed by the Warren Commission.
And yet,
why was he never interviewed?
Well, that's really odd because, you know, he and Hill were the ones that got Jackie out of the car.
Exactly.
And that's so evidenced by pictures.
Why was he not interviewed by the Warren Commission?
Well, and that's evidenced by pictures. I mean, there's photographs of that day that show him where he says he was.
Yeah.
So it's not as though he was making the up. You know what I mean? There is a trace.
I don't think he's making any of it up. I'm questioning why.
Right. Why didn't they ask him?
The investigation.
Yep.
Why did we wipe this car clean instead of pulling evidence out of it? We've got three bullets. One is in pristine condition, and come to find out, apparently wasn't the same bullet that was given to the Secret Service originally.
Yeah.
According to the guy that found it on the gurney.
Right.
What he told the Warren Commission is this is not the same bullet. Period. One was pointed and the other one was rounded. Tip.
Yeah.
So, you know, that brings a major question. Now we have these two bloody bullets. Again, why weren't they?
You don't hear much about them.
And yeah, wasn't there any? You can pull fingerprints off of these bullets.
Sure.
So
well, you can't now whether or not you could pull. Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember 60 years ago because there's a lot of stuff that we can do now that they weren't necessarily doing back then. It does indicate that they found the fragments. You know, I know from my days in private investigation that people's recollections of events, because in this article and his conversation, the sit-down conversation that he had, I'm not finding anything in here about him talking about bloody bullets.
Well, in the New York article, New York Times article by Peter Baker. He said that Paul Landis claimed that he found the bullet lodged in the back seat of the limo behind where Kennedy was sitting. He said he grabbed it to keep souvenir hunters without saying anything to anyone placed next to Kennedy, thinking it would help them solve it. Hold on, let me find it. There was nobody there to secure the scene, and he was afraid that a piece of evidence would be lost. He filed two different reports in the week following the shooting. In those reports, he said he only heard two shots. He did not mention going into the trauma room when he filed those paperwork. And he said, Landis claims after reaching the hospital and getting the president and Mrs. Kennedy from the car, he noticed two bullet fragments in a pool of blood, fingered one of them, and then put them back. He spotted the magic bullet, put it in his pocket, and went into the hospital. So, again, if he found these two bullets in a pool of blood, why weren't they able to find more evidence from them? It just doesn't make sense to me. There was so much evidence that could have been from the shooting desk and from the limo, just those two places, they could have pulled fingerprints. Because if
right,
if Oswald had not touched those bullets, his fingerprints wouldn't have been on them.
So really quickly, it's really, you know, it's very fascinating. And like I say, I encourage you, I sent you a link to the BBC article, which also has a link to the Vanity Fair article, so you can scour over that. I've looked now, the only mention of bloody has to do with the bloody sheets that were on the gurney that brought the president in. There's nowhere in here that he says anything about having seen any bloody bullets in this account that he gave to this individual.
Right.
Apparently there's, and we'll have to see what he says in his book. If he says anything about that in his book, I don't know. There's one other piece to this though, that I think is important, and we'll close as we'll talk about this for a few minutes, but I just want to put it out there. And that is the whole distrust issue. Because, you know, for most Americans at the time of JFK's murder, most Americans still put a great deal of trust and confidence in the United States government. Now, there had been some questions raised regarding that because the media was able to spin the Joe McCarthy hearings and turn those into, the government's after the people, which it was not the truth. The reality is that you had the Naked Communists that had been written, and all that information had been put into McCarthy's hands, and he knew that we were being infiltrated by the communists on multiple levels. And the people like Edward R. Murrow, and they have this Walter Cronkite award that they give out now to journalists, which if you really know what Cronkite did, He supported the communist agenda. I believe so. Yeah, because of the reporting that he did. See, they needed to spin Nam. Now, whether he did it knowingly or unknowingly, we could look further into that to decide. But the spin on Vietnam that was done was a communist disinformation operation to turn the American public against America and against the Vietnam War, because Russia was working, the Soviets were working to secure a foothold in Southeast Asia for communism. And they knew that if there was a united America, like there had been at the end of World War II, that there's no way that they could have advanced their agenda. And so Pacheco was a part of creating that entire narrative when he was with the guy from Romania. And they talked about how what they were doing. He had not defected. He was a part of that disinformation campaign in order to create confusion and to support the subversive groups that were on the college campuses, the SDS and the others, in undermining our confidence in our government. And that was a part of the 45 goals.
Well, I think that, and I've said it before, I've said it for decades, the fall of the American government, the government that our parents knew, not the government that we know, but the government that our parents knew, the fall of that government started in Dealey Plaza. Because at that point, the government realized we can control and we can manipulate and we can decide what people know, think, and believe, because we have the power to keep things quiet. I'm all about national security, okay? To me, there are certain things I feel like, and I've said it even before my son went into the military, but definitely a whole lot more since he did go in. When there are events that transpire okay, let's say a platoon gets attacked, all right?
Mm-hmm.
No information from that attack, and I know it happened during Vietnam. When I was growing up, I was a kid, and my dad watched the news every night, but I don't remember Bob and I being allowed in the living room, depending on what part of the news was on, because they were showing actual shootings going on, you know, following the troops in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And now, you know, something happens and a unit is attacked and the media is quick to jump on it and go, you know, today at 2 o'clock, and it's now 2:15, a platoon was attacked and 10 men are killed and 17 are injured. And every mother and father and sister and brother and child across America is now afraid to answer their phone or answer their front door because they don't know if it's their son or daughter. That should not be happening. News like that should not be hitting the news air until after families are contacted. When my son was in Iraq, when he decided that he was going into the military, and we talked about it, and he was 11 or 12 at the time, and I told him, I said, son, you do understand, because he wanted to be a Marine, and turned out he ended up being an Army scout, or sniper. But I said, you do understand that you're going to go into foreign countries and you are going to kill somebody that doesn't know God and doesn't know Jesus as their Savior. And he said, Mom, if that's what I have to do to make it safe for missionaries to go in there, then so be it. So at that point, I said, okay, God, he's yours. I'm putting him in your hands. And I'm not going to think twice. And I didn't. When my son left for Iraq, was I excited about it? Absolutely not. Was I worried about it? Absolutely not. I knew that God had my son in his hands. Mm-hmm. Fast forward, I don't know, several months. And I talked to him several times a week, you know, on Zoom. Actually, I think it was Skype at that time. And would get emails from him and that kind of thing. And this one particular night, I woke up out of a dead sleep. And I was in an absolute panic. And my boyfriend was working nights, and what he does, he would know semi-things going on. And I'm calling him, and I'm just freaking out. I can't reach my son. He's not responding. And it was 3 or 4 days before I finally heard from my son. And I was sending him messages, call mommy as soon as you get this, you know. I don't care what time of day it is, call me. And when he finally did respond, like I said, 3 or 4 days later, and he said, Mom, I'm okay. And there was all these news reports and stuff going on. And when he came home, and he and I were talking, and he said, Mom, he said, do you remember when you freaked out those 3 or 4 days? And I said, yeah, I remember. And he said, it was bad. He said, it was probably the worst thing we had the entire time we were there. And he said, but I couldn't tell you. He said, and I wasn't going to tell you while I was there.
Right.
So for the peace of mind for parents and siblings and whatnot, they really need to hold that stuff until people are able to let their families know, or the families are contacted. But because of the media, everything is, well, open information. And I blame Washington a lot for that. That information, remember the old saying, loose lips sink ships?
Yep. Oh, it's, listen, I believe me, I know. I mean, I watched it, you know, I used to get so frustrated with things. It wasn't so bad. Carter would let a couple of things slip, but it wasn't so bad then. It certainly wasn't bad, in my opinion. Reagan didn't let things slip.
Right.
Obviously, we know who George H.W. Bush was, but even still, he didn't let things slip other than, read my lips. But Clinton started letting all kinds of things slip. And that was horrible. I was just flabbergasted as former military and, you know, what my experience, I was flabbergasted at the things that Clinton and his administration would say. The Bush administration wasn't as bad, but there were still things that they put out that I thought, Colin Powell in particular, that I thought were not appropriate. And then with Obama, I mean, it was
just
horrific, absolutely horrific. And of course, that was, you know, directly tied to Hillary Clinton, and she told our enemies everything, and I know for a fact that they gave up our positions and soldiers were killed as a result of information that Hillary Clinton gave to our enemies. I know it for a fact, but nobody's going to prosecute it.
Exactly. And that, as far as I'm concerned, goes back to what happened in Dealey Plaza. We have discovered, the government has discovered, we can decide what we're going to prosecute. We can decide what we're going to talk about. We're going to decide
who knows what. Vivian, I know I don't disagree with you. But I think it's cut both ways. and both are negatives. On the one hand, like you said, you have a situation where you have entities that, and part of that I also tie to what was happening at the end of the 50s, you know, when they were able to shut McCarthy down, and you had the spies that were there that he was going after, and he became the guy that they took out instead of the spies. Those individuals got locked into power, and that's why what you're talking about happened, and we began to lose our government. And then part of their plan to do that was to create doubt by the people, because they didn't care if the people doubted what they were doing or weren't doing. They were going to run their game. They were going to do what they were there to do, irrespective of how the people were responding to it. They didn't care. But it was in their best interest for the people to have distrust, because they could use that distrust against their political enemies, and they did.
And, well, they're doing it now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's A6. Yeah. I mean, that's what sunk Richard Nixon. They were able to take Nixon out by using the very tactics that they had begun in Daley Plaza against him.
But you look at the J6ers and the way the government is.
It's horrific.
Controlling what the media is allowed to tell.
Yep.
Versus reality.
Amen.
And it's a nightmare.
Yeah. No, it is.
It's an absolute nightmare.
It is.
But the government has decided we are the all powerful.
Well, I would, and here's where I the only challenge I give to that is the educational side of reminding people that the government's only purpose and its only right to exist is created by the Constitution, and its goal and its only objective is to defend the rights of the people. And the government is we the people. So I don't necessarily refer to these people as the government. I refer to them as usurpers and tyrants who have taken over, because part of it is apathy on our part and part of it is programming. And I talked about this earlier in the program. We have more single parents than we've ever had in our history. And where we have two parents in a home, predominantly both are working. Now, it used to be to, you know, maintain some kind of a affluent lifestyle. That's not the case anymore. It's just to survive. It is just to survive. And so by doing that, they've taken control of the children, and we are at least three generations in of this process of creating the cycle. So the average American doesn't stand a chance to a degree when it comes to understanding what these usurpers and tyrants are actually doing to them, and they've been programmed to accept it. I was talking to the Lord about this last night. When you think back about Germany and Hitler and what took place, every German wasn't a bad person, okay? And every German was not running around doing whatever. A lot of them just stayed in their homes. When jobs happened, they went to the job, they came home, they basically just lived their life with blinders on. And that was one of the reasons that one of our generals, when they found that concentration camp, made them come out, because he was like, look, you know, you saw the ash falling in your street. You know, you saw the trains arriving. You knew what was going on. But they were like, you know what? If they're not bugging me, if they're not taking my kid,
it's okay.
And it wasn't even a matter of a moral I mean, some were, obviously. We know how they treated the Jewish people and Christians and others that didn't come in line. But right. but the issue is that for a lot of them, they were just like, look, I am busy just trying to get by. My country is at war. I get all of that, but I'm just doing whatever I'm doing.
I'm just trying to get through life.
Yep.
And if you go back and you look at history, Hitler managed to brainwash the children.
That's what Goebbels said. Yep.
That's happening now to our children.
Yep.
If you look at what they're trying to put in the schools,
yes,
it's horrible. Now, yeah. I was very fortunate in the fact that I was a stay-at-home mom. So I was able to homeschool most of my kids, three of them. I wasn't with the baby because I had to go to work when my ex-husband left.
Yeah.
But between me and her siblings, we were pretty much able to keep her
straight
out of the liberalism. She still has some liberal leanings that we have to
deal with,
but nothing like could have been.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But when we look at what they're teaching the kids today, I'm very fortunate that Sandra is able to keep her kids. They talk. She and Manny talk all the time with the kids about what is right and what is wrong and what is acceptable what's happening not only in the government but in the schools.
Yep.
So the kids will say, Mom, this is what's going on. Dad, this is what's going on.
Yep.
And we're very fortunate about that. I mean,
I hear kids
coming up behind them, and it just... Yeah.
Well,
I'm telling you,
absolutely.
Scary.
Well, and that's my point. We'll close, folks, at this. But you know, and the bottom line here at the end of the day, I just want us to be clear that, you know, when we talk about the United States of America as it was envisioned by our founders as a constitutional republic, is still the greatest form of government ever conceived, besides God's format that he gave to the Jews in the Old Testament, which is essentially what our founders were aiming to get back to when they founded this nation. That was the goal, was equality across the board and only one that you report to, God Almighty above, and maintaining his rule of law and moral standards, not predicated on subjective feelings, but predicated on objective, absolute truths and realities. Vivian, thank you for being with me today. I appreciate it. Good conversation, as always.
All right. And as soon as I finish the book and check into this other stuff, I will let Ken know so he can let you know what we got going.
And we'll have another conversation. Sounds wonderful. God bless you, folks. Have a great rest of your day.
All right, have a great day.